Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty here on a Thursday. It is November 11th. First of all, happy Veterans Day to all of those who have served our country across the five military branches. We honor you. We salute you. We do not take your sacrifice for granted in the least bit. And especially to our father, George Garcia Sr., who served the Army between 1962 and 1964. So, special shout out to him. The list could go on and on, and I would feel terrible, Goes, if I tried to mention all of the veterans in our lives. So they know who they are, and hopefully if they're listening, they know that we think of them constantly, because we constantly have communications with all of them, not just the ones that we met on the military trips that we've been on, but the ones that have been around our lives, in and around our lives, this whole time. So folks, on today's show, we'll probably tell you a little bit about our military trip. I was hoping to do it just a special one-off show, just focused on that. But I think we'll be able to talk about it here, because between our social media posts and the little bit that we said on Monday, I think you all will get the gist of just how much that trip meant to us. And you'll see pics and videos for the next couple weeks, because there's a lot of it. We'll also cover Bellator 271. They just had their weigh-ins. We'll give our final predictions. It's hard to kind of go against Cyborg, but we'll see. You never know. Plus, we have a UFC fight night, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 22. That one's going to be pretty special. Luis Palomino was on that military visit with us. He's defending his lightweight title. And, of course, tons of news. MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, November 11th. Goes, let's do some heavy lifting here. We'll get the work requirements out of the way, and then we'll kind of have some fun and cruise the last few minutes. Plus, we have a pre-recorded interview with Elias Theodorou that's kind of a little bit outside the box of what we normally talk about. Elias is definitely a trailblazer of sorts. We'll explain when we put the interview up here during this show, but more on that later. So, Goes, I just want to start with the big news, and it's not anything to do with this weekend. It's going to be regarding what was supposed to happen next month at the UFC 269 card in Las Vegas. Jorge Masvidal was supposed to fight Leon Edwards. He has pulled out. Of course, it's been big waves to probably, arguably, the second biggest pay-per-view star in the UFC after Conor McGregor. This was heated. This had some bad blood that had been built up for almost 3 years now, remember? Or, well, at least 2.5 years. Remember the three-piece in a soda out in England? They were supposed to settle it here. And, of course, this would be huge for Masvidal, who wants any – he's focused on getting another title shot. And Leon Edwards, man, this guy just wants to fight. You know, he's been held back by all kinds of different problems, injuries, pullouts, visa issues. So this card takes a little bit of a hit.
Yeah, the card takes a hit, but it's like, if you're Leon Edwards, you almost have to expect these types of things at this point. I mean, he's been so snake-bitten in this department. And Jorge Masvidal is just the type of fighter where something like that doesn't really affect him as much as it would a Leon Edwards. Like, for Jorge, there's tons of people that would want to fight him. There's tons of guys that he wants to fight. He's, like you said, he's probably close to being the second or third biggest draw in the UFC, so it's easy to put him in another matchup. It's Leon Edwards that's difficult. And Leon Edwards is definitely closer to a title shot.
Leon Edwards already said, I knew this would happen, you know, I'm paraphrasing. And okay, time to rest up. I'll be ready when you are, Usman. Something along those lines. So as if to say, I was making an exception because I already am, you know, I should be the number one contender. So I was just gonna make an exception because the UFC asked me to fight Masvidal. But since he's out, boom, I'm next number one contender. Because now, when that fight was made, we still hadn't seen Usman and Covington play out. Well, now we have. Usman's up 2-0, so there's really no reason to run those guys back for a trilogy fight or anything. There was no controversies or no disqualifications. So Usman's just looking for the next possible opponent. Of course, Vicente Luque was supposed to weigh in. He didn't make championship weight, but he still was the backup fighter, and the UFC still paid him. So I don't know how much that hurt him, but I'm sure he would have an argument about possibly being next. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. But I can tell you this, Usman didn't sound like, yeah, man, January or February, let's get this ball rolling. You know, he said he wanted to spend time with his daughter. He just fought for 25 minutes. He also fought three times in 2021, so he's been punching the clock. You can't say the champ's been lazy. I just don't see him fighting anytime sooner than, I'd have to say May, maybe. You know what I mean? It sounds like he wants at least the holidays and maybe half of January, because most kids kind of go back to school that first week in January. So let's just give him the first 2 weeks of January to really spend good quality time with his daughter, who I'm sure is some sort of a Christmas vacation, winter vacation, whatever you want to call it. And then I could see him maybe dipping out, you know, and considering training and or a possible training camp for a fight that would take place, you know, a little bit later start in the year than he did last year. What are your thoughts?
It ain't happening anytime soon. That's for sure. I mean, like you said, he said it himself. He said it before the injury even happened. He's just not interested. In fact, he's even talking retirement. Like, that's kind of around the corner a lot sooner than we all thought, which is weird because I thought the one thing that he is chasing is this kind of that legacy, and you need a little work to catch up to George St. Pierre. You're right there. So I didn't expect that retirement word to come out of his mouth. But he said it even before the injury went down. So now Leon Edwards, again, is just stuck in the middle. Hamzat Chimaev definitely raised his hand. He's down. But boy, that might even be a worse thing than fighting Kamaru Usman. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. He does look like a beast for sure. You know what was funny was, you're right, Chimaev came out and said, I'll step in. I thought I saw Bilal Muhammad do it as well. Gilbert Burns. Don't quote me on Luque, though. But what was funny was seeing Neil Magny go, I thought y'all were busy or something like that, because Magny's been waiting to fight some of them guys, and some of those guys haven't been hitting him back. There's this whole, like, ask your manager. I signed. I said okay. You know, all that bullshit that people like to post on social media where we don't know if it's true or not. Man, I'd be tagging everybody involved, goes, so that there's no doubt that I'm ready to go and this guy says he's ready to go. Put that matchup together and let's go, you know? I believe Leon Edwards will have to take a fight. I don't think he can just sit there and wait around for Usman. And, you know, Dana White kind of said so, except applying it to Carlos Esparza. I wouldn't wait, you know? And he was even saying that to Carla Esparza when she refused to be the backup, kind of been hinting at it, that they have an option outside of her. But I don't want to pivot to her just yet. I think what Leon Edwards should do is, if Masvidal's injury is going to, where he's going to be out for a while, he should really consider one of those guys willing to take the fight on short notice. He's the prepared fighter. The other one's taking it on short notice. Now, is it a style matchup difference? I suppose. But again, it's a style matchup difference for a fighter who is taking it on short notice. I would really consider staying on the card, getting paid, and keeping that momentum, making sure that you stay ahead of Luque. Because similar to what happened with the winner of Gaethje and Chandler, which in this case was Gaethje, those guys possibly fell behind after Makhachev put on the show that he did. He dispatched of Daniel Hooker really, really quick. He was very impressive. A few people were saying he's next. He's next for the winner of Charlie Olives versus Dustin Poirier. The other two guys took exception to that, especially Gaethje. He wanted a riot, he said. Gaethje handled his business. Now he says he's next. And guess what? Sometimes if you go last, you make the last impression. And I would say there's more people going, yeah, give me Gaethje versus the winner of Charlie Olives versus Poirier versus, you know what? I side with Makhachev versus the winner of Poirier and Charlie Olives. A lot of it has to do with just name recognition, their fighting style, but a lot of it also has to do with them just being the last person that had a chance to impress them. I don't want Edwards to fall in that situation. Not that I'm team Edwards or anything like that. I'm just saying, I always say this about all the fighters. I try and be square top to bottom, but I think that could happen if he elects not to fight next month.
For sure it could happen. But, you know, I think we're at the point where politics are almost out the window because this guy just needs to make money. Like, think about how long he had went without a fight and finally got a paycheck. These are prime years of your life. You got to make some money. So I think he's in that situation, but he also has to make sure that whoever he gets, that you can kind of make some kind of deal with the UFC or something and tell him, just look, I stepped up when you needed me. Every time we've ever asked, I've tried. I mean, shit happens, but, he's got to get that title shot eventually. He can't just keep fighting people. That's a horrible situation to be in. Masvidal win over him probably would have put him there, you know, but I don't know that a win over Neil Magny or someone like that does that.
Yeah, because remember, we said that was the best case scenario when we said April. Maybe March, I don't know. But to me, it sounded like a fighter that just wanted to take at least 6 months. That sounded to me like a 6 months answer when he gave John Morgan and he brought up family and the importance of family and how money isn't going to be the only sole driver in his decision-making. So that's why I'm coming up with May, honestly. And, you know, it could be July or August. Does Leon Edwards want to wait? I don't know. You know, that now he'd be pushing almost a year from when he last fought. I don't know. Maybe Leon Edwards is like BJ Penn and he comes for money and that's not even in his thought process. He just wants a title shot. Who knows? But, you know, I think we've seen enough of these situations to play out. Here's what I propose. I think Edwards, by the way, do you know why Colby Covington calls him Leon Scott? I don't get the bag there.
No, I don't.
It's kind of funny. Maybe there's a joke in there somewhere. Like if he were to say Leon Spinks, I guess it would be his way of saying, oh, I confuse all Leons. I don't get Leon Scott. Maybe there's a movie I missed and there's a character that he looks like. I don't know. It's not important, but Covington's a trip. I think if Usman and the UFC say, yep, it's time for, you know, we want to do this, and there's a date out there, then I suppose Edwards gets it. And then we're left with Covington versus Masvidal. But again, I don't know the severity of Masvidal's injury. I reached out, but I haven't heard back. I don't know if it's just a knee sprain, we'll say. 6 weeks of rest, ready to go. Or something more serious that would require surgery and an extended time off. Who knows? But if that pairing becomes possible, I don't see that there's anything hotter than Covington versus Masvidal. And then that would lead Edwards versus Usman. But just because Covington and Masvidal might match up, it doesn't mean Edwards would be next. I don't know. Maybe Edwards versus one of these cats might make some sense. You know, again, Bilal Muhammad was out there. Khamzat Chimaev was out there. I think Stephen Thompson was out there. So, you know, I don't know. But what I can tell you guys is I like Magny versus Chimaev, and I'll tell you why. Because no one's calling out Chimaev, and this guy is. He's a step up again from what we've seen. Although Li Jingliang may disagree. I'd have to go back and see. I know him and Magny fought, and I would sound totally absurd if Li beat Magny. So I'll check it when you start to talk. But he's around that level. You know what I mean? All those fighters are on that level where it still is a name value fight for Chimaev and someone that continues to maybe push him up the rankings. And again, he wants Chimaev, whereas the rest of them don't. But here's what's going to happen. Burns, Thompson, Muhammad, Edwards, Luque, they're all going to fight each other. And eventually, one of those is going to become Neil Magny, someone who's now staring outside of the top 10. And the way to get back into the top 10 is by calling out the toughest, the person that they don't want to fight. And so that'll be the progression of Chimaev as Chimaev gets closer to a title. Or maybe it'll be someone coming off a win. I don't know. But when you have someone saying, I will fight this beast, book him. Let's see. Magny's not a bum. You know, Magny's respected. He has quality wins. He has quality losses too, but he's proven himself. So I would pair those two in Covington and Masvidal and then just figure out the rest of the mess.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's very rare when you get a guy that's actually asking for the one guy that everybody's trying to avoid. So I would be okay with that. I feel like Leon Edwards, Masvidal may not happen at this point at all. I think, you know what I honestly think they're leaning towards?
Doesn't have to happen right away, but it's got to happen. You said not at all.
Well, I mean, look, I mean, the thing about Masvidal is he's getting older age-wise, but he's also been doing this a lot longer than people know, right? There's like the casual fan thinks this dude just kind of showed up out of nowhere. He's been doing this for a really long time, so his body's got a lot of wear and tear on it. But what I think that they may do is something that I've been asking for the longest time, and that's for them to be coaches on The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, that's ratings galore, you know, but we just don't know the severity of this injury, so we don't know how long he'll be out.
This is true. Well, as long as the fight happens, I don't mind if they do a coaching stint. Covington doesn't fight too often anyway, and he hobbled out of the octagon the other day, so it didn't look like he'd be ready in 3 months, but I don't know. He's just – both of them are out of the title picture, so the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. Neither one is, like, on standby in case Usman's future opponent can't fight because they're 0-2 against the champ in title fights. So I'm actually really, really liking that. If they are going to have a season of tough, those two make sense. You don't have to you don't have to be a healthy coach, you know, to coach. You just have to be healthy for when it's time to fight. And that fight would probably occur later in the year. All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Keep it locked on MMA Junkie. We're always keeping an eye to see who's chirping, who's tripping, what's been signed, what hasn't, what's been ruled out. But, you know, Dana says, if you want to fight, give me a call. And it sounds like Chimaev and Magny do want to fight. And guess what? It would be a step up because I looked up Neil Magny's record. He did beat Li Jingliang. So it would be a step up for him name-wise. And in terms of, you know, someone who's just ranked higher, at least if what I'm looking at, USA Today Sports MMA Junkie rankings, the best rankings in MMA. Now, I guess I mentioned Carla. Let's talk about her. She did an interview with Danny Segura, our colleague here at MMA Junkie, and she's just so passive, goes. I really, really like Carla and what she's done. And she says, I'd like to know what that option is. And maybe it's not in her personality, but I thought she was going to be a little bit more aggressive, you know, in her own defense. But that's just really not her. I laid out two options. One of them is this. Tatiana Suarez, undefeated at strawweight. Great wrestler for Team USA. Won the Ultimate Fighter. And beaten Carla Esparza. So if she were to go, because she just had a knee injury, she's probably about 4 months in, 5 months in. Usually those knee injuries are about 9 months. But if she were to go, I'd be ready for Rose in May, and I will dip back down to strawweight. Because she never had her first official fight at flyweight in the UFC. Then I see her saying as being more than adequate for the title shot. The other option is Jessica Andrade. Jessica Andrade has been a bantamweight, a bantamweight, a strawweight, and a flyweight, including a strawweight title. And a win over Rose. So she's 1-1. So she lost to Valentina Shevchenko, but then she beat who she just beat? Was it Cynthia Calvillo? Who?
Calvillo.
Yeah. So she's working her way back up the flyweight, but because she's got that pivotal win over Rose and they're 1-1 and she was a former champ, perhaps they could do that trilogy. I still like Carla more as the number one. Like, if you put me in a corner and go pick, I'd go Carla, Tatiana, Jessica. That's how I would run it. No, I take it back. Boy, that's tough to get away, man. If Tatiana's ready to go, I'm a big guy when it comes to big proponent and supporter of head-to-head. I might go with Tatiana on that one. But I just think Carla's earned it, you know. Tatiana stepped away for a while. She got injured. She committed to 125. Now all of a sudden she's coming back. I don't know. I guess I could make her wait one. But what did you think of that interview, and what do you think of her stance?
I think she can't be that vocal either, because she's just going to get punished for it, you know. But I do like her just saying, well, okay, what is it? You know, like, why do you have to keep it close to your cards, close to your chest? Like, it's a threat from the UFC. That's the part that sucks, is they're basically threatening people. And she's earned her shot. I think she deserves it. If you can come up with other names and you can finagle things so that it kind of makes sense, but at the end of the day, it doesn't make more sense than Carla Esparza. You know, you're just kind of covering your tracks. So really what you're left is a situation where the UFC just does it. This isn't just a message to Carla Esparza, it's a message to everyone. You know, don't sit out and wait. It's just not a good thing. And you know, the people that control that are the UFC. So what are they telling you? They're saying, we'll make it not a good thing. So it just really sucks for her. But I don't know that being even more vocal will help her get that shot. I think it's pretty obvious. I think the media is doing a lot of fighting for her. I think other fighters are stepping up a little bit here and there. But I think she's earned it. I think she deserves it.
Do you think the media is fighting on behalf of her, or the media just
sick of it.
Covering
sick
it back of in the UFC and Dana White's face because they like the brawl with Dana White in the UFC?
Yeah, a little bit of both.
Yeah, so do I. And it's funny when it's fun when you at least get to go to bat on behalf of someone that's pretty cool, like Carla seems to be. We've had a couple times that we've been able to, you know, see her in person and or have her on the show, and couldn't be nicer. But it, you know, like I said, it's always more fun when you're going to bat on behalf of someone who's not an asshole. We'll see what happens. Check out that interview on our front page, MMAJunkie.com. And, oh, man. As far as the welterweight division, we'll just have to see how that plays out. I did want to say Tatiana Suarez is a representative of the United States in the world championship level, not the Olympics level. I knew that as soon as I said it. I go, that doesn't seem right, because I remember she had that neck injury and she wasn't able to compete in the Olympics, even though she qualified I think she was number one in her weight class, but she has represented the United States in the world championship. She's a beast, man. Carla Esparza, you know, was a collegiate wrestler, but that was one time where her wrestling was very, very tested when she lost to Carla Esparza. All right, let's go over to Bellator goes. Bellator had their weigh-ins, right? They have a fight card out in Florida, the Sunshine State. And Chris Cyborg is going to be defending her belt. She's defending it against Sinead Kavanaugh. Both ladies made the championship weight of 145 pounds. So that's good news. We don't have, you know, any problems as far as the main event goes. The main event is going to be on Showtime, and the fights are tomorrow night, Friday. Today's Thursday. And it'll be 10 p.m. Eastern on Showtime. We also have Terrell Fortune and Linton Vassell, two of their top 10 heavyweights over at Bellator. The fight is important for both gentlemen, as those guys are now starting to patch up that heavyweight division and figure it out a little bit. You know, we got Ryan Bader, I'm sure, will be defending sometime in 2022. One matchup I'm really keeping an eye on is Justin Gonzalez, undefeated. That's the J-Train out of Colorado versus Aaron Pico, now living in New Mexico. Both weighed in, both ready to go. Both could be players at 145 pounds, the featherweight division. Arlene Blanco versus Pam Sorensen. Sorensen had a scare. She needed to weigh in two times, but she made it. Obviously, the winner of this fight raises her stock in that division, which is the featherweight division, which Bellator has a lot of. Not a lot more than the UFC, but more than the UFC, so that's good. For the most part, goes, I think everyone made weight, but guess who didn't? Valerie Lareda and Taylor Turner. Both didn't make weight, so they agreed on a catch weight. All right, that worked out. But I can tell you this, that Valerie Lareda is super popular on Instagram. She's kind of like the Kim Kardashian of MMA, if you know what I mean. I still think that I think it can bite you in the ass when you have some of that Paige Van Zandt type of popularity, like some of these gals do, like Valerie Lareda does, like, you know, some others do. And boy, when you start missing weight, I think it's just a sign that tells me, hey, you can fight, hats off, but I don't know if you're that championship caliber and you're going to run into a freight train at some point. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Especially when she comes from the team that she does. There's so many people to lean on. You just have to think, is your head in this? You know, what is it that you're doing that's not allowing you to make weight? Like, there's so many people around you that can help you and push you. Why do you not have this motivation? And after she suffered her first loss, you could tell it affected her a lot. And it seemed like she went back to the drawing board, but this just kind of reminds us that I don't know that this is her first priority, because that's such an important part of your job.
No doubt, for sure. I've seen a few men that, I guess what I'm trying to say is, there is enough people that make weight every weekend that when I hear too many excuses from the ones that don't, I'm starting to roll my eyes. I think everybody gets that one. All right, you had a bad cut, female problems, personal problems, maybe something technical like the sauna or the weight scale in your room. I don't know, but there doesn't seem to be too many excuses left, because so many people get it done, and a lot of them have done it for so many years without any problems. And so that basically puts a bigger spotlight on the ones that don't. You know what I mean? And I'm noticing Valerie Lareda is really, really interesting as far as, like, yeah, she kicks ass on Instagram, super popular in that regard. Can she blend the two? We'll see. But and by the way, look, I don't want to sound like I'm picking on her. I kind of almost asked the same thing of Tyron Woodley a few years ago. And I was just having a conversation on text. And I told him, I don't know how you do it, but, you know, you're dropping hits, acting. He's a father, gym owner. I think he was a husband at the time. I don't remember his situation there. He always seemed to be traveling everywhere. And he goes, you know me, homie, I can get to it all, you know. Not too soon after that, though, is when things didn't go away. And he publicly admitted this, that maybe he was being stretched too thin. So it doesn't always happen from people that don't work hard. It's just sometimes you just get stretched too thin. And sometimes you run into someone that their only thoughts every day is being a world champ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And she kind of got bailed out in the sense that they both didn't make the weight. But I think had the spotlight been shined on her, it would really be a tough pill for people to swallow.
Yeah, definitely. Have you checked out the fight motion for UFC 269 with Gaethje and Chandler? They got some nice super slow-mo. If you haven't, checked it out. If you have, pretty amazing, huh?
You know what? I'm going to sound a little bit like a hater or something, or a weirdo. I can't watch it. The fight at normal speed was brutal enough for me. I've seen a couple of these where it almost makes me feel bad. I don't know. It makes it look so much worse. Like the Frankie Edgar picture, I saw it one time, and man, I really just didn't want to see it again. I just felt so terrible.
Okay, fair enough. What do you think of Aaron Pico stating he doesn't want to fight former teammate AJ McKee? And AJ McKee's told us the same thing. He does not want to fight Aaron Pico. But at the same time, you know, what do you think Bellator thinks of all this too?
You know, it's the weirdest thing, because they've had that stance for so long that I kind of get it. But at some point, somebody's going to have to make a decision. You know, AJ's kind of said it a couple times, like, I know I'm just going to outgrow this division. And maybe something like that happens and he leaves and it leaves the door open for Aaron Pico. But I could see if, I don't know, both guys are just so down to earth. And when you talk to AJ McKee, and especially his camp, you know, at the Body Shop, their philosophies and all that, like, I just kind of get this one. I do.
Okay. What are your thoughts on what happened over at Bare Knuckle? You know, I love the fight buildup and stuff, but are they pushing it too often, too much over there? Should Feldman, David Feldman, maybe tell everybody, hey, let's let this breathe a little bit. We just lost one of our brothers in August. We had a death in the family, per se. But yet we're still kind of like acting a fool. I mean, I get it. You know, these fighters only have a couple times per year to grow their brand and get that release from, you know, beating someone up. It's their job. It's what we all signed up for. But I don't know. Like, I saw a belt get snatched and a table get flipped, and it doesn't want to make me buy it anymore. I was already in, is what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean? I'm already set for the matchup. They got a couple title fights. They got some bad blood everywhere. Let's just deliver a good press conference and some good, you know, face-offs, and I'm good with that.
I would think that David Feldman probably did do that. But it's hard to control some of these guys, especially when you're talking Hector Lombard, who's one of the most intense fighters in all of combat sports. It's definitely not a good look coming off of already, you know, like the things that people say about mixed martial arts, right? Even we haven't really convinced everyone. And then you take Bare Knuckle, where you can take MMA fans and they'll tell you, ooh, that's a little too brutal. So to already have that, like, you're already kind of behind the eight ball. So with just what just recently happened, and then, you know, you add these types of things, yeah, it's not a good look for them. It isn't.
Well, to be fair, luckily it's mostly Lorenzo Hunt. You know, yeah, you're right. Hector Lombard's intense. He doesn't back down from anyone. It's not like he was having a cup of tea and saying, you know, ignore this chap. I mean, he was ready to throw down as well. He always is. But I think that Lorenzo Hunt is the one that's like enough already, you know, is what I'm saying to him.
Probably, yeah.
Max Griffin goes, is the 2021 recipient of the Forrest Griffin Community Award that the UFC has given out.
Max Holloway.
Max Holloway, I apologize. I said Max Griffin. I comboed names. He's the 2021 recipient of the Forrest Griffin Community Award that the UFC gives out. They announced that in a press conference ahead of this week's fight featuring Holloway and Yair Rodriguez. Last year, the winner was Dustin Poirier. What do you think of Max during fight week? It looks like he's been saying the right things. It looks like his focus is definitely on Yair. But, you know, he addressed, obviously, his situation within the division, him and McGregor chirping at each other. What are your thoughts on where Holloway stands right now?
I don't understand the odds in this fight. You know, a guy like Yair Rodriguez, to me, is like kind of that kryptonite for Max Holloway, because Max is just too willing to take a shot, and Yair throws some crazy shots from crazy angles with a lot of power. I think that fight should be a lot closer. But as far as like what he's done in the community and all that, he deserves it. You know, I've seen him do that many times. I believe he visited where Laura works.
Right.
He was there. Right? Uh-huh. So he's done a lot of this type of stuff. He's a good kid, man. He really is. He's such a nice dude, even in person. I'm glad that they recognized him for that. But as far as where he ranks in the division and all that, yeah, he's just got to be him. He's got to be impressive and just beat down Yair Rodriguez. But I don't know that that's going to be as easy as people are making it sound.
I want to say a couple things here. First of all, congrats, Max. I think that's an outstanding award to receive. And he's been on military visits. And like you said, Goz, he visited Cure for the Kids Foundation in Nevada. That's where Goz's girlfriend works. So, you know, he was there to hand out toys to the cancer patients there. And he's also helped raise money in Hawaii and more specifically the Maui Food Bank. So, you know, Hawaii obviously is comprised of many islands, but he's helped raise money there. And then as far as his standing within the division, you know, I was asked a question by my nephew, Marcus Gonzalez. And so I'm going to answer him here, and then maybe that'll get him to start tuning in a little bit more. He checked out Spinning Backlick. He liked it. But he says, does Holloway get another chance? Not does he have a chance, does he get another chance? I know what he means. Holloway's 0-2 against Alexander Volkanovski. It's rare to get a third shot. It really is. It doesn't happen often, folks. I can't think of too many off the top of my head. But, and that goes for the history of MMA, not just UFC. But Holloway looks so good when he beat Calvin Kattar earlier this year. He's still young, so he showed that improvement that we're talking about. And basically, he's kind of beaten a lot of people along the way. Not to mention, he's got a win over the current UFC lightweight champ, Charles Oliveira. So he's got a lot of skins on his wall. He looks super good against the tough Calvin Kattar. I think basically he's just going to force the UFC's hand in that, because he was a former champion with so many wins still in his prime and showed that he looked better and could possibly compete better in a third fight. And plus, let's not forget, fight two was so close that many scored it for Max Holloway, including yours truly. I think he's the one guy that has a really, really good chance. Plus, he has a fan-friendly style. I think he's the one guy that has a really, really good chance of getting that third shot. But he's got to look good against Yair Rodriguez. So not just win, but I think win and get a finish and smoke that mic, man. Look, you know, say something. Say something. I think he'll get that third shot. But he wasn't just going to get it straight off the Kattar win. He was going to have to win one other fight, and this is the one.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation for him. I think he can do it, though. When you say it's like difficult, it's not just titles. Like even outside of titles, it's just difficult to have. I think what Sakuraba and Vanderlei went at it three times, right? Or four, can't remember how many times they went at it. But what helps him in this situation is the fact that a lot of people felt like he won that second fight. I think that's the one thing that's going to help him. But if he can stomp out Yair Rodriguez, it's going to be difficult. You know, it really is. And I think there's a piece of Volkanovski that kind of wants to shut people up as well. I noticed that in this fight with Brian Ortega. There's a little nasty streak buried down inside of him. And I think he kind of wants to right that ship a little bit as well. So all those things have to come together to help him out. But if anybody can pull it off, any situation, it would be this one.
Is it safe to say that you got Max Holloway winning the fight against Yair Rodriguez this weekend?
I do, but I honestly think there are things that Yair Rodriguez does that can give Max Holloway a lot of problems.
Well, he's one hell of a kicker. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's definitely going to be dangerous, but he doesn't fight very often. I'm not as impressed with Yair Rodriguez as others are, but I do know that he can kick. So we'll see. I feel like Max Holloway has seen basically every single type of blueprint that's out there. So nothing really, really will shock him, I guess. He'll be prepared. He'll be ready to go. But if Yair gets that space where he can get some of those kicks off, almost like how Marlon Vera did against Frankie Edgar, he'll have a decent chance to compete and possibly win. But the minute they close that distance and take that away, like Frankie Edgar was doing early on in the fight, it becomes a lot tougher for Yair Rodriguez. And that's one thing Holloway can do. He can get in your face. He can throw hands. He's accurate. He's got a great chin. He's got a ton of experience. I don't like Yair's chances this weekend.
He can't win a decision, but I think he can get a knockout possibly. Because Max Holloway, I think, just depends way too much on I have a hard head and I can take a shot. And that's not there for your whole career. So if Yair Rodriguez does win, I see it being like a head kick. a counter and just boom.
Yeah. And you know that Zabit Magomedsharipov, he hasn't made any noise. Ortega's got the loss to Holloway, and he lost to Volkanovski recently. So now you're looking at, you know, Josh Emmett, perhaps. He's got to get past Dan Ige in December, UFC 269. Cater, well, Holloway beat him. Arnold Allen, he hasn't been put in those positions where he has those big fights yet. He's 17-1, but he hasn't been put over yet by a top five guy. The Korean Zombie, his ship seems to have sailed. He's kind of headed the other direction. Bryce Mitchell, put him in that same group as Arnold Allen. So we got a lot of young guns going that way up, and a few veterans falling. But those young guns need to get those top five guys. Throw Giga Chikadze, I guess, as another guy who is very highly thought of because he's been fighting often. And people make a big deal when Giga wins, deservedly so. He looks great. But I just think Holloway's too big of a box office ticket to get away from. And again, he put it on Cater. Had he just barely beaten Cater, I don't know. Maybe he might need a third fight. Who knows? Look at Robert Whittaker, man. Robert Whittaker beat three killers, and now finally he's got a shot against Israel Adesanya. And this is a guy that's like 13-1 as a middleweight. But it's weird how it works, Gozi. It's so weird. And then you got Zhang Weili got her ass kicked by Rose in the first. They waited a year almost, and they said, well, let's have him fight again. For what? She got finished.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It didn't go to a decision. There was no controversy, but I think the UFC really, really wanted to tap into that Chinese market, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I could see why Zhang Weili and Joanna needed to be run back. That was the fight of the year. That went all the way, you know, all the way to the end. But this one was clearly finished, but they still chose to do it and overlooked Carlos Esparza. Don't get me going on that one, man. I'm telling you, I can talk about that one all day. Now, people will also tell me, and I've heard this before, hey, George, well, what about Aldo versus McGregor? Aldo was a long-running champ. He got finished quickly. You could say it was a lucky punch if you want to, whatever. It wasn't. It was pinpoint. Why didn't you campaign for him? I think I did. This was back in 2015. I think I did. That needed to be run back. But the minute McGregor said, I now want to challenge the lightweight champ, I understood the UFC's position. For them to have a simultaneous champ, they hadn't had one at that point. That was going to be big, and Conor McGregor was a unicorn. Everything he was growing was tremendous. His shows goes were basically like financial windfalls for the UFC at the time. I think one of his shows at that time was probably the equivalent of everything else they were doing the whole year. It was becoming that big. So I understood the UFC's position. But then, if you'll recall, RDA couldn't go. He fought Nate Diaz, and then it turns out those fights were even bigger. So that's why I understood why Aldo didn't get his immediate shot. But I've tried to be consistent on this topic for a long time. And you know, and I get why some people would, including Volkanovski, would say, well, why do I got to fight this guy a third time? But it seems like he's open to it.
Yeah.
I've also come around on Volkanovski, man.
He's cool.
He's good. He is good. He's cool, and he's good. And I guess I just wasn't there. I wasn't there for him. All right. Listen. We're going to cut it a little bit short on the MMA side, but goes any thoughts on this trip that we took to Norfolk, Virginia, to JBLE, our eighth trip overall, our seventh to JBLE, most of our time at Fort Eustis these last couple trips, but we did pop in to Langley Air Base. I believe the website's going to have something of a recap on our trip. Check out our social medias as well, at the goes, at MMA Junkie George, or personal thoughts from your heart, from your soul on this special Veterans Day.
I think every trip really is different for different reasons. You know, I know it's a different cast every time, but they all kind of make their mark in a different way. And this particular one, I think the way this one made its mark was, I can't remember a trip where we connected more with the troops. That was a big standout for me in this one. Just really pulling them aside one by one and just hanging out with them and talking to them. with COVID and all that, it was a little bit of a different feel. Like when we throw our fight party, we fill up three rooms filled with people, and we go back and forth. You know, that's a lot of people. With COVID, there's restrictions, so we were back down to one room, and we were just able to kind of sit around and hang out with them a little bit more. And I think we saw pretty much every facet of what they go through. So this one for me really stood out in the sense of connecting with the troops. And everybody was just so great. And the fighters that came along always deliver. They always do. And everybody kind of delivered in their own way.
Special shout out to Dan Henderson, King Mo, Ricardo Lamas, Luis Palomino, and Eric Nixick. Luis Palomino, by the way, will be weighing in today if he hasn't already. He's going to be defending his BKFC lightweight title tomorrow night on BKTV. Check it out. It's his. It'll be a title defense for him. And again, he was with us 1 week before his title fight, so I'm definitely keeping an eye on that. Hopefully, he competes well. Good luck to him. But in regards to the trip, special shout out to Nina Basantes, the tour director, the tour mom, and her boss, Donna Fonts, over at MWR, Colonel Thigpen, Command Sergeant Major Huell. They are some of the ones that really moved the pieces for us to come out there for our seventh time. And they make it so easy for us to be, you know, rested and comfortable, so that we can just basically and prepared, you know, because they give us a very detailed agenda. We go out there, we meet all the different units, and like Ghost said, we really did connect. We really had one-on-ones, group chats, things like that, and it was awesome. It was really, really great. The visits that they planned for us were amazing. You know, some were spine chills, you know, goosebumps. And then some obviously were just like deeper thoughts and conversations with some of the younger soldiers that are just getting their careers started. Other times we were gasping at the beauty of the F-22 Raptor in the air, you know, landing, taking off, and doing its thing. It really had everything that we could want in two big days. And then, of course, that fight party, man. We get to watch a UFC with the bravest men and women on the planet. There's nothing like the colliding forces of MMA Junkie Radio and the Fort Eustis Club. It was amazing. It was super loud. It was crazy. A big shout out to Rev Gear and MMA Bobblehead for giving us gear, apparel, bobbleheads, things like that to give away to the troops. Stuff that we've accumulated from over the years. We even had some leftover Bellator, UFC, PFL gear as well. One championship. So thank you to those organizations that have given us stuff over time. And it was very fulfilling and gratifying and inspiring to be out there. It was amazing. I can't wait to go back. How about just even that archaeologist, man? We got to see the Matthew House in greater detail. We got to see the Langley Air Base in greater detail. We had never gone to that cool little bar hangout club that they had, Spuds or Spads or whatever they called it. That was different. You know, we've been in the airbase. We've been in the traffic control at the top. We've been on the flight line. We've been in the hubs that house the F-22 Raptor. But this time we got really, really up close, spent a lot more time with the pilot, Twist. Shout out to him. It was really, really cool. Bowling, like a lot of people came over to us in bowling. And that usually happens, but this time seemed more than ever. So that was a hit as well.
Yeah, it was a fun time. It definitely stood out. I was going over pictures today of different trips, and you can point to something in all of them.
Yeah. So be on the lookout for that. I think the MMA Junkie team is also going to cut up a lot of stuff on social. If you don't mind sharing it and retweeting, so wherever you see it on social media, just helping us get the word out, that's great. You know, for Goz and I, we would love to do more of these, to be honest, and at different bases. But for right now, JBLE is our home. It'll always be the OG for the domestic morale visits that we've done. And if you're wondering why it's 7 there, and we mentioned we've done 8 back in 2013, for those that don't know, I know most of you have heard this many times, we got to do one in Afghanistan for just short of 2 weeks. We're out there at Bagram Air Base, Manis Air Base, Camp Phoenix, NKC, Moorhead, one other one. I always forget it, but we were at different bases all over Afghanistan. And so when you reference, when we reference saying we've been on a Black Hawk helicopter, I think myself, Goes, and Dan Henderson have been lucky enough to fly in one. It's amazing. And so now there was pictures of us up, you know, at the top where the rotors are, the engines are, and you know, sitting in the cockpit. It was really, really cool, man. Doing the simulators, that was outstanding as well. And I honestly can't wait to go back, Goes. I think what I want to do next time is maybe go a day early. I want to prepare my body and rest my body, because one thing for sure is we kept busy.
Yeah, we definitely did. It was a schedule, all right. I mean, one day we had to get up at 5 a.m. I think we had to be there at 5 a.m., so I think we had to get up at 4, right? But
yeah. Which is 1 a.m. our time, because we haven't had a chance to adapt our body to the three-hour time change after a whole day of flying on an empty stomach and bad Italian food. That's not a good recipe. All right, listen, let's do our Elias Theodorou interview, and it's a pre-record. I think you'll enjoy it, and then we'll be right back. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes are back. This time we get to talk to a longtime MMA fighter, veteran of the UFC, now doing his own thing. We got Colorado Combat Club 10 coming up on December 18th, Theodorou versus Baker. Of course, he's not only the headliner, promoter. He's wearing a lot of hats. Too bad, too, because he's got to hide that golden locks of hair that he has. What's going on, Elias? How are you?
I'm good. Just another day in paradise here in Vegas. Been here since September and loving every second of it, and looking forward to keep a good thing going until about December 4th when I run off to Colorado to, you know, settle in with all the elevation.
Promoter and fighter, and I believe you're also dabbling in some other stuff you were telling me. Like, you're keeping busy, right?
Yeah, busy's good. Got many different hats, as you mentioned, but unfortunately hats don't fit my head. And I don't want to hide, actually, the hair. But what's called? No, I'm also here for the World Series of Poker. I've done some solid runs over the course of the tournament. I got a couple more next week and the week after. I didn't jump in the main event for the World Series of Poker because it's a 5-day component, and I can't commit that much time. I obviously got a fight to win and some ass to kick.
How many events have you played, and what's the best you've done?
I placed 13th in what's it called? One of the events, more specifically, the what do you call it? Daily, the official World Series of Poker daily. I've been kind of just out of the money in a couple of other events. I partnered with GG Poker, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, online poker sites. I kind of partnered with them over COVID. I've only been playing poker in any capacity for about a year, and in that doing, I've made some final tables, and kind of my claim to fame is I'm a little bit of a psycho with it. So like with their app, I'll like, kind of like backing up. I don't drink and drive, obviously, but I'll drive my car to a bar, and then, you know, I'll have a couple of drinks, and no matter how far it is, I'll leave it there. And then the next day, as kind of a punishment, I'll run to it. So I've like basically run half marathons to my car while playing on their app. And making final table. So like I've competed and done pretty well over the course of the year with, again, only about a year of actual poker experience. One of the things that kind of was cool leading up to it is I kind of partnered with another Toronto native who's kind of one of the top in the world. And I've been teaching him how to, you know, work out, lose weight. And he's been teaching me how to not suck at the poker table. So it's been a wild ride.
Wow, that's good. And that's great that you definitely aren't getting behind the wheel after a few drinks. That's quite the punishment. But at least you're making something out of it, making some dough as well. But it's always good to pass that along. Yeah. Don't drink and drive, folks. It's always
for sure. Safety first.
A terrible
decision.
Better
to win some money on the poker table. It's better to win money on the poker table on the way over.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Now, another thing I meant about the wearing many hats, like, I know you're the promoter behind the scenes. I know you're fighting in on the fight card. Are you a matchmaker as well? Did you put together some of these fights, or did you give that to somebody else at least?
No, that's the Colorado Combat Club. Obviously, there's a little bit of removal in regards to my involvement. I'm in many ways helping provide the financial components. I'm bringing a lot of the sponsors on board for this event, and especially with my fight, I'm obviously staying hands distance away from it. Obviously, I can't be picking my own fights, but with that said, I'm really excited about my fight. Another veteran in the sport, a former title contender in Bellator, and someone that's hungry and always shows up. And I'm looking to fight a game opponent and make history while doing it.
So, Elias, tell us about the groundbreaking stuff that you did in Colorado. You have an exemption for yourself for marijuana usage, right? Can you explain how all that came about?
Yeah, it kind of obviously took many years. It all started when I was with the UFC, obviously with them partnering with USADA, the United States Anti-Doping Agency. It was a big breakthrough for the sport. I'm a huge believer in clean sport, but unfortunately, my medicine, medical cannabis, is considered a prohibited substance, and especially was, during the time that I was with the UFC. You can look back at the, other examples of, past athletes like Nick Diaz, who, competed against someone with an actual banned substance, but yet got more time than the other person with a banned substance for his cannabis use. And it was an outdated, outdated mentality, outdated look at cannabis. And that was a stigma that I have been and still am very adamant and unapologetic in my fighting against that stigma. So I applied for a therapeutic use exemption with USADA, and it was a long process, and there are many obstacles, many hurdles I had to clear. Originally, I had a medical card here in Canada, or back home in Canada, for my family doctor, and there was more that was needed, so I compiled much more medical records. I exhaust all other medical options. That's kind of the backwards approach that USADA had. I basically had to try every other prescription, opioid, and painkiller and antidepressant under the sun just to try and come back to prove that cannabis worked better for me. And obviously, not only did the opioids, the SSRIs, the antidepressants, and the painkillers were less effective than cannabis, but they also had horrible side effects. And not only a patient, but an athlete competing at the highest level, it was very detrimental to my career. Again, to the point where it made me bloated. I was gaining weight, and anyone that knows anything about fighting, fighters have to constantly control their weight and cut weight. I'm about 210 pounds any given day, out of season. So, adding 5-10 pounds is a huge detriment, not only to the training session at hand, but also just my mentality and, my psyche kind of going through the process of a fight camp. I got to the point because USADA never says no, but they just deny you and tell you the reasons why. Originally, there were about 10 reasons why, and I got it down to about 2 or 3 before I ended up leaving and parting ways with the UFC. But I realized how, halfway through, especially with like the doctors and the, the researchers, I had researchers, for God's sakes, that were a part of this whole process with USADA. And they kind of, unfortunately, confided to me and said, USADA probably just doesn't want to do it. They don't want to make the history. They don't want to set the precedent. And in part, it's because they are funded by the U.S. government, and the U.S. government still looks at cannabis as a Schedule I drug, which means it has no medical properties under the U.S. government. And, USADA has changed its tune in some capacity, but even the way that the USC has touted, what USADA has done in regards to removing it as a quote-unquote prohibited substance, it's actually a red herring. You have to say that you like to get high. You can't, if you still say you use it for any anxiety, pain, or any medical reasons, USADA can still penalize an athlete because then it's considered performance enhancing. So it's kind of backwards in the sense that you know, the stance with USADA and the UFC right now, you have to say you just smoke weed to get high. And that's, you know, recreational has a big importance in cannabis. But for me specifically, it's medical cannabis. I'm using it for my condition of bilateral neuropathy, pain. It's basically nerve damage of my upper extremities. And as you can imagine, everything I do kind of, you know, exaggerates that. So leaving the UFC and becoming a free agent, I ironically was able to be an agent of change for cannabis. And I took it back to Canada originally, and I applied for a therapeutic use exemption through the province of British Columbia, where I fought last March 16th and was able to take on another fellow UFC veteran in Matt Dwyer, who I TKO'd in the third. But in that fight as well, I was both, you know, fighter and promoter, and helped bring back combat sports back to Canada post-COVID with our protocols and our health and safety standards. So, you know, this now kind of coming full circle, I was able to use the precedent that I had in British Columbia and take that to Colorado. And the way that the commissions kind of work, they all work in congruency with each other. Obviously, for instance, something like, you know, a suspension, for instance, can be, you know, honored in a different commission. So too can a ruling in a positive sense. And that's what happened with my therapeutic use exemption in Colorado. And I think the kind of caveat to kind of express in regards to the difference between USADA and the athletic commission is that both British Columbia and Colorado, their athletic commission is actually run by the state and provincial government. So in doing so, this is the first time a state sanctioned government through British Columbia, and obviously now in the US with Colorado, has approved cannabis as a medicine in sports. So this is actually not only just me getting an approval for cannabis, but also more importantly, another foundation to medical cannabis rights in Canada previously, but now in the US.
So Elias, do you feel like maybe, did you set forth like a blueprint for other people to kind of get through all this, or are they gonna have to go through exactly what you went through, which seems like it took like a long time?
It definitely took a long time. It was about 5-6 years at this point. But my case sets precedent. And we're talking, you kind of mentioned it before previously, what is my role in the Colorado Combat Club as a promoter. Part of that is actually going to be to help any athlete that uses medical cannabis to see if through my counsel and through my, you know, again, roadmap and blueprint, if you will, if we can get a therapeutic use exemption for them this event or next moving forward. And that's the really important thing to kind of stress, is the fact that this is not only about me, this is about setting precedent for other athletes to use, you know, the blueprint that I've set forward.
You give new definition to the term trailblazer in this regard, but I did want to ask, you said, you know, USADA says you can, you know, use cannabis if you just say, hey, look, I'm coming clean, I just like cannabis. If you ever had the opportunity to go back, would you do it or would you not do it based on the principles that you fought for, you know, because I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'm wondering if you would go back and just play by those rules.
Again, I'm still very much focused on the fight ahead, and there's still other jurisdictions both in the U.S. and abroad that I'm planning to continue to fight. Again, I'm very much focused on the task at hand, but never say never. Both with USADA and also the UFC, obviously they've made many inroads in regards to going in the right direction. But you know, I'm whether it's I'm stubborn or I'm dedicated to fighting for what I believe in, and I believe that medical cannabis is here to stay, and I choose to fight to be on the cannabis side of history. And again, with that said, both USADA and obviously their parent company, WADA, are moving forward in the right direction, and who knows where they'll be next year or the year after, as they do have a planned meeting all of WADA recipients, I mean, the participants in different countries plan to come together. And again, I'm going to be talking after my fight to the CCES, the Canadian Ethics in Sports, and that's like the Canadian version of USADA. And I'm going to be talking to them and seeing different avenues in regards to how I can help them, because they've been pushing for basically the removal of cannabis in professional sports and amateur sports, more broadly speaking, in the Olympics since I think about 2015. And kind of the halfway point was them allowing CBD not too long ago. So again, everything's kind of going in the right direction. I think people are starting to realize more and more that cannabis is a plant, and more specifically a medical plant. And I'm very committed to doing my part to continue to fight the good fight, not only for myself, but for all athletes.
That's a great answer. I think it's, you know, perfect for exactly what you've been through. You've been through a lot of roadblocks along the way, and you fought for them. And now look at all the doors that have been opened, and you're probably going to be the reason why doors continue to open. But at the same time, Elias, you're in your prime and you had a good run in the UFC. You know, I think you were 8-3 or something. You're one of the top middleweights in the world. So I'm glad at least you're keeping that door open.
Yep. Again, there's still plenty of fight in me, both in the cage and out. I got a tough opponent ahead of me, and I'm looking to make a statement. And once I finish him, that'll be three fights and three finishes since the UFC. And again, the reason why I haven't necessarily been as active as I wanted to be is because, again, the larger fight that I've been trying, and obviously COVID, because that's delayed everyone.
Right. Well, one other thing, though, because I think there's a lot of moving parts involved. So USADA, you know, you explained how they've come around and how they are going to be able to work with the athletes in the UFCs. What about the individual commissions? What can you tell me about their latest? Because usually they like to be on board, whether it's the rules and regulations, but when it comes to this, this is a whole other topic. What have you heard? Are they all going to trickle in as well, you know, with their support of cannabis use, you know, across not just the United States and all 50 commissions there, but the provinces of Canada?
Yeah, so I think certain places like, for instance, Ontario, where I'm from, it's kind of been grandfathered in. They never really tested unless, you know, a third-party testing service like USADA comes in with the UFC. So like the example would be CFL football players aren't tested for cannabis and never have been. Whereas obviously the NFL, for instance, that has always been part of it, and only now more recently has been restricted only for, you know, preseason, you know, the preseason games and stuff like that. So again, everything's kind of going in the right direction. Different commissions like Arizona and Florida have outright removed cannabis penalization. It kind of should be treated like any other type of substance in the capacity of, you know, if you're impaired, you're impaired. They don't test you for alcohol. They just test to see if you're cognitively there. So that's something that, again, different commissions are kind of seeing and kind of going in the right direction. And I'm looking you know, to do my part to continue that fight and to continue that push on the cannabis side of history.
So you'll be fighting Brian Baker, who last I remember, because we covered him a lot, you know, through WEC, Bellator. He lived in Colorado, and you mentioned you're moving there a couple of weeks early. You don't want to play around with the altitude. What's the preparation like for, you know, Brian Baker, I guess, you know, like in regards to altitude and his skill set?
I think a lot of it's still, you know, me doing me. As you mentioned, I had a very successful run in the UFC and overall in regards to my career. And part of that is, you know, the cardio and, you know, kind of the push that I kind of take to my opponents. But, you know, obviously that kind of, no pun intended, elevation in regards to my determination to look for the finish. In the UFC, I did have some criticism in regards to, you know, some of my finish performances. But now, you know, out of the UFC, I've kind of reinvented myself, obviously, both inside the cage and out, and looking to continue that. I'm looking very much looking to the finish and looking to take it to him from pillar to post.
Last question, just because you seem to be well-versed on the topic of cannabis. Perusing your Instagram, you know, I noticed that you are promoting vaping, right? Spooky vapes, they're called. But of course, in the news, we'll see. I mean, I know there's different types of vapes, you know, that I don't know if it's because of the age, the kids, and obviously very, very frowned upon. Is that like just a different generation of vaping, a safer version of vaping? Is it the same vaping? I don't know much about it. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah. And if you wait 1 second, I'll actually grab it for you. 1 second. Sure. 1 second. So the best way to explain it, this is much different than the vape that you see with like the cartridges and stuff like that. This is
CBD,
this
right?
This is it's all flower. So it's actually the healthiest way that you can actually vaporize with cannabis. This one's called the Mighty. As you can see, it's kind of mightily big. The flower goes inside here and it actually has no combustion. So, you know, like when you're smoking a joint, obviously there's a paper, there's a butane from the combustion in regards to the lighter itself. And this is actually Health Canada, New Zealand, and I believe Australia and even the UK as well approved. So this is actually like the healthiest way you can actually medicate with cannabis. And again, it removes all the toxins and just allows the vapor of the actual flower. So in many ways, it's the healthiest way that you can medicate with cannabis. And I kind of do it obviously for my own well-being as a athlete, but also if I'm going to advocate cannabis, I want to do it in the healthiest way possible. So I partnered up with Storz & Bickel, the best in the business, and couldn't be more happier with, again, them and the other partners that I've been able to compile for this fight and the many fights ahead moving forward.
All right. Thank you very much for that explanation. And good luck with the camp you have left for Brian Baker. It's too bad you got to fight through Thanksgiving. You're going to have to fight off them urges, you know, and enjoy the reaps and the benefits of a good post-fight meal. But I hope you get through this camp, you know, healthy and safe weight cut and a great performance against Brian Baker, the beast Brian Baker. I mean, I definitely remember. I went to – check this out. 2008, Goz and I went to see him fight Chael Sonnen here in Las Vegas. Great, great fight. So he's a veteran, man. He's an OG. Good to see him back in the game. That's going to be a good one on December 18th.
Thank you so much. Great fighter. And it's one of those things where – I'll make up Thanksgiving during Christmas.
There you go. All right, folks. Colorado Combat Club 10, December 18th in Greeley, Colorado. Look out for that. And Elias, thank you, man, for doing this interview. We appreciate it. Great catching up with you. We'll talk to you soon.
Ciao.
Hey, that guy's a trip. But I'm happy for him, Goz. He is leading the way in terms of the acceptance of cannabis. Not just like, hey, man, I like to party. Don't deny me. It's 2021. But for the medicinal purposes, and obviously I think just catching up on the real times, that is, it's not the terrible stigma that it once was to, you know, consume marijuana for a variety of reasons. And it definitely doesn't appear to be in any way a performance enhancer. I think that's been well documented as well.
Yeah, who knows what doors this opens for everyone else, but he definitely has a passion for all that, and his work doesn't seem to be done yet.
Good luck to him for the rest of this camp, and we can't wait to see him compete at Colorado Combat Club 10 on December 18th. That's our show for today, folks. Again, happy Veterans Day to all those who have served or to those that you know that have served. Please pass that on behalf of the MMA Junkie Radio team. Thank you, as always, for your support. Special shout-out to Ella from Hawaii. He was catching up on some episodes yesterday, and he was sending me his workouts. He's always an encouragement for me to get off the couch and get in there and get something done, sweat in some way. But he's a long-time listener, cool, cool cat, so a little special shout-out for him.
And a shout-out to Brandon Holmes, who catches every episode. One of the kids we ran into, that's his father, and he says his dad always gets excited when a new episode drops.
Right on. All right. So we're going to bounce on out of here, and we will see you all on Monday. Enjoy the fights this weekend. We got Bellator, we got BKFC, we got UFC, so there'll be lots to talk about on Monday. Until then, go out there and always be a champion.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.